Hello and welcome to The Double Pivot, the world's most agreeable soccer analytics podcast. I am Michael Cayley, and we said a few weeks ago that we were just going to keep covering the title race, because like, how often do you get this kind of title race? Not often. And I feel like something has happened in the discourse recently that I want to respond to, because this weekend, Liverpool and Arsenal lost, City won, and so City are now 2 points up and are the favorites for the Premier League title. And I kind of feel like this is being treated in a way that is based on the way the Premier League has run for the last 5 to 7 seasons, and that isn't really a good way of understanding what the Premier League is right now. So, instead of saying what I mean by that, I'm going to introduce Mike Goodman, and then we're going to have a podcast about it. Mike, how you doing?
I'm good. The music you heard on the way in is Wailers. Please download, subscribe, make us happy as podcasters. Patreon.com/doublepivot. We are in the middle of some seriously good soccer, all things considered. Champions League is great. Despite what people seem to want to believe, title race, still great in the Premier League. And, like, you know, we got, like, massive matches coming up the next few weeks. So, I'm happy. Soccer is good.
Yeah, so if you want to hear our Champions League takes, in particular our breakdowns of those matches from last week and some previews of the matches coming up this week, that's at patreon.com/doublepivot, and we'll be covering more on that side as well. But yeah, let's talk about the Arsenal and Liverpool games a little bit and then contextualize them.
Yeah, I mean, both of these games struck me as games in which Arsenal and Liverpool were better, games in which Arsenal and Liverpool didn't necessarily play up to the standards of Arsenal and Liverpool, but games which nevertheless, in many universes, these two teams would win. Like, that was, in different ways, I felt that way about both of the matches. Now, interestingly, I think the ways that it was different were, like, very authentic to, like, each team, in that...
Exactly.
Liverpool's game was way too up and down, out of control. They gave, they generated much more than Crystal Palace on balance, but they allowed a lot to freaking Crystal Palace. And Arsenal were way too slow and in control for most of it. Even though, again, they out-generated, especially in the first half, Aston Villa. And, like, on a lot of days, they just score a goal in the first half and win. So, you know, these games happen? Like, I don't know. Like, that was my reaction to these two games specifically.
Yeah, I think the Arsenal one is somewhat weirder within the Arsenal context because of the way they set up to start this match, which was that Arteta took the lineup that worked in the last 20 minutes against Bayern and started it. And so you've got, you know, Zinchenko at left back, which becomes the big discussion point. But more interestingly than that, you've got the, I have no idea what these people's positions are left side of the attack. Odegaard's clearly playing the 10, and to a certain degree, the 10 who comes off of the right. And Saka is on the right wing. But Havertz is the striker, or maybe the 8. Trossard is the left winger, or maybe the 8. Jesus is the center forward, or maybe the left winger. And which is exactly what they did in those final 20 minutes against Bayern. So, like, it was the same setup, and it's a more aggressive setup in certain ways than the usual Arsenal approach.
Yeah, but then they paired that with, like, an extremely slow pace in possession. Which, to be fair, is, like, some of that is, like, you credit Unai Emery. That's what Unai Emery wants to do to a team. But, like, nevertheless, Arsenal let Unai Emery do it to him. And I mean, despite all that, maybe they win a lot of the time. But they could have played better. And then you have the errors by Zinchenko, and that's kind of all she wrote.
Yeah, and I think that, like, Arsenal in the first half were really targeting, like, using those runners in the left channel. And they got those runners in the left channel a lot. And the problem is that Kai Havertz is not a really good one-on-one player, and Leandro Trossard is only an okay one-on-one player, and so on top of this, the scoring chances that they really created, they also had a bunch of scoring chances cut out by Diego Carlos, who is good enough to defend most of those players. And, like, it's not, like, the places where they chose to take risks were places that, like, it's not that hard to put a narrative on top of why it didn't work. On the other hand, there are days when those guys just do beat Diego Carlos and Arsenal have 2.5 XG instead of 1.7.
And on the flip side, we have Liverpool, who created 2.5 XG and didn't score. But it is somewhat interesting. Like, oftentimes when that happens, it's because there are, like, three dramatically awesome saves by a keeper. And that's not what happened here. What happened here is Liverpool missed, like, a lot. Like, they just kept missing. They missed to a degree that I have not done the research on this, but I would be amazed if there was, like, a lot of games in the recent history of the Premier League where there was as much missing as Liverpool did in this game.
Yeah, and the one, like, big save is just Darwin thwacking it into the keeper's chest. It's not, like, a save. It's just, you know, he got great contact and it happened to be exactly the wrong kind of contact.
Yeah.
And Liverpool, like, they only concede 8 shots, but, like, Mateta twice and Eze once for the goal have, like, fantastic scoring opportunities. And this is the way that Liverpool play, and especially the way that Liverpool play after they go down. But honestly, like, they went down because of the way that Liverpool play. Like, they went into this season deciding not to have a proper defensive midfielder. They went into this season deciding that they would get more than enough midfield out of guys like Endo and Jones. McAllister has been shockingly good, honestly, but, like, it is a thin approach, and they were still going to push the fullbacks forward. And, like, they did these things, and they got lots of good chances, and it was, in fact, Curtis Jones who ended up on the end of a couple of the very best chances because they kept throwing bodies forward from midfield. And I've been praising Klopp for approaching it this way, and I think it remains the case that it is correct that a team with this talent should just accept that sometimes the other team is going to break through, and accept that even as good as their center backs aren't always going to make the plays. And this game was just that, 100%. This is a game that Liverpool have been winning 3-2 a lot, and today, this time, they lost it. But, like, it's just the same game they always play, basically.
I will say, if you're ever going to look at a statistical profile and make the argument for a team not handling pressure well, this is the prerequisite statistical profile to make that argument. On the attacking side. Create a lot of chances and miss them. Like, yep. That is the... I don't want to make that case, to make that argument. I don't think it is true. But when I do analysis and when I sit down and when I think about these things, do I think it is theoretically possible for teams to crack under pressure, to have the pressure of a big moment, you know, have a deleterious effect on their performance? Sure, of course I do. I think it can happen. What I would say is, if you're looking for it happening, this is the place to start. Did they miss a lot of XG worth of chances? Not did they have them saved, not did they not create, like, did they just miss? And Liverpool did. I tend to think it's just one of those things in this game. I tend to think that, like, when you spend a lot of time coming from behind, and Liverpool have spent a lot of time coming from behind this year, you are, like, upping the amount of games like this you play, which will increase the chances that one of those games, something like this will happen. But, you know, it is true, they missed a heck of a lot.
The other thing with Arsenal, to go back to them, because I find their game just a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, I do too. Because to some degree, it's like Aston Villa are a much better team than Crystal Palace, so there's a lot more interactivity to what you're doing when you're doing your analysis.
Yeah, and it should be noted that Villa played a quite diminished team here.
Yeah.
In particular, they're trying to make do with Tielemans and McGinn as a midfield, and Zaniolo as Zaniolo and something called Morgan Rogers. And they were able to have quite a bit of the ball. The one thing that this Arsenal setup does when you've got Havertz and Trossard and Jesus in whatever exactly these roles are, is that Arsenal are kind of wanting to get the ball on the break to them. They're wanting to take advantage of Villa not having a pressing lineup. And they just sort of let Villa have quite a bit of the ball. Villa did very, very little with the ball in the first half, but it's reminiscent of the very little with the ball that Bayern were able to have and use as a defensive tactic. And I'm interested in why Arsenal are not quite getting as much possession to strangle games. I think there's some degree to which teams are realizing that if you just let Arsenal be near the penalty area with Odegaard and Saka, you're going to lose. And they're coming up with other answers to this problem. And they are, like, working okay. I think there's some degree of, like, are people starting to figure out ways to respond to Arsenal? The other question that I have here, the other point I would make here, rather, is that Arsenal have been on a utterly stupendous defensive run. And it really has been the case that they have been conceding, like, 0.4 XG per match, a few shots, low-quality shots every match. And I think we've said, I certainly have said many times, I just don't think it's possible. Soccer is just not a game where anyone can have that kind of defensive control. And in this game, they didn't. They played a good defensive game. They gave up two reasonably high-quality chances, both of which were scored. Like, that's soccer. You know, it wasn't a bad defensive performance at all. It wasn't a defensive performance that I think, like, says something worse about their defense compared to their defense previously. Like, maybe you could have a few questions about the way that they gave up those chances to Bayern and their approach, but here I don't think there really is. It's just that, like, no one's perfect, you know?
I guess that's the next point, right? So no one's perfect. Is that true? Or is Manchester City going to be perfect, right? Like, these are the conditions for the title race now, and I think they are worth talking about, since it seems to me like on Sunday everybody decided the title race was over.
Like, there's a certain kind of learned helplessness with Manchester City because they do often just go ahead and win the title. They got like a point or two ahead of Arsenal last season and held on. They got 1 point ahead of Liverpool the season before that and held on. They've done this a couple of times. They've also lost the title a couple of times. And I think that the fact that they've done that a couple of times has then made it seem like, okay, well, if City ever do this, then they will keep holding on. And I think that's just kind of not a good way of thinking about this present title race.
Yeah, I agree. I also think some of this is just the path we're on. Like, had Manchester City been 5 points ahead, and then they lost and these two teams won in Arsenal and Liverpool last weekend to create a situation where these two teams were 2 points behind, everybody would be like, title race on, game on, here we go, even as City were still out in front. I think bookies have them at like 66, 68% to win the title, all of which seems reasonable to me. But when you get to 68%, where 2 weeks ago you were like 47-ish%, a little less, as opposed to if you had been 85 and it drops to 68, it does feel different, right? It feels different. It's a tightening versus a widening. But the state of the race is not, in fact, different between those two situations.
Yeah, and there have been a couple of seasons where City were behind and then did like a sort of like T-1000 run and like nothing can stop them. And the underlying story was, well, there's a lot of randomness in when the points come, but City are the better team.
Yeah.
Last season, Arsenal, you know, they were ahead by enough that they were favorites, but they never had the better statistical profile.
to be fair, they had an equal statistical profile, roughly, pretty deep into the season. And then City did go on the, like, the T-1000 tear, and then the statistical profiles diverged.
Yeah, the statistical profiles diverged before the T-1000 tear a little bit.
It was sort of like, in January, the profiles started to diverge, but Arsenal kept pulling wins out of God knows where. But, and then by March, they were different, and then City just sort of put on the afterjets.
Yeah, and then there was that amazing title race back in, I think, 17-18 between City and Liverpool that also had that kind of character.
Yes.
Then there's also Liverpool's 2020 title win, where, like, City were the better team?
Yeah.
But who cares? Like, they just kept pulling the wins out of who knows where. And then, but you also have some other ones, and this one is more like the City-Liverpool title a couple of years ago. That Liverpool team that no one remembers as being one of the great Liverpool teams that came 1 point short, but, like, we're just there with them the whole season. And this is that. This is, and it's even more interesting because it's two teams that are there with them the whole season. Like, there would be nothing at all weird about a team as good as Arsenal or Liverpool have been this season, by the underlying numbers, by the goal difference, et cetera, by points, obviously, winning the title, because they've been about as good as City are in their average title-winning season.
Yeah, I mean, these are mid to upper 80-point teams, basically.
Yep.
Mid to upper 80-point teams, there's absolutely nothing weird about those teams winning the title.
And like one of those teams in a season could end up with 95 to 100 points, and that's happened a few times. But like that's just like variation.
Two things. One, the other thing about mid 85-point-ish teams is that, like, sometimes they drop a game. Like, as we saw this weekend with Arsenal-Liverpool. Sometimes they play not as well as they should have and are still better, but also lose. And, like, there is nothing about Manchester City that says that that couldn't happen. When we think about it, which is why they're, like, 66% and not, like, you know, 93%. Despite what people feel about it. But the other thing that I think is interesting here is that part of the reason this title race is so close and so good is that none of these teams are out over their XG skis.
Yeah.
And it is interesting and somewhat rare that that happens. I think what you would usually probably expect from three very good teams like this is that one of them, just like by sheer roulette numbers, is having a great finishing season on one side or both side of the ball and has put distance between themselves and the other two teams, despite not really being that much better. And we haven't seen that this year.
Like, City have six games. The odds they drop 0 points in six games, not very high.
Yeah.
The odds that Liverpool and Arsenal drop 0 points in six games, not very high. Like, this is the sort of football is a dumb sport thing. Having a 2-point advantage is a big advantage, but it is not a big advantage because it means you control your destiny. It's a big advantage because the other team will probably also blow a game, and then you can blow a game, and it's okay.
100%. Just absolutely 100%. And, like, I don't know. Like, I don't, like, it doesn't feel to me like because of this weekend, the title race is over. I get that the vibes feel bad in a lot of places here. And God, if Arsenal were to lose to Bayern Munich in the Champions League, the vibes would get really, really bad there. But, like, they're just good teams. I don't know. Like, they're just good teams.
Yeah. And so we have this, like, race between three legitimate, no one would feel weird about it at all if they won the title teams. And by definition, two of them won't win the title. It seems increasingly likely that at most, we knew that at most two of them could win a European title. You know, barring some sort of miracle for Liverpool, which they've done, probably only one of these three teams will win a European title, as well as only one of these teams will win a Premier League title. There are a limited number of titles. And football is a game where sometimes Atalanta beats you 3-0 when the chances are closer to even. And so, like, that's all you can do. And, like, I know This is one of those moments where I feel the most at home with that XKCD, like, let's make a bunch of narratives out of a random number generator. Like, these are just really, really good teams, and sometimes they're going to lose that game or they're going to lose that game, and it's really hard for me to say that, like, we've learned something from now City going ahead or from whatever is going to happen in the Champions League games that are yet to play. Like, just really good teams playing against each other. These are the ones that have dropped the points right now.
The other sort of point to make as we talk about random number generators is that there are two things that also increase sort of random number generator, you know, go burr. When you have three teams in a race, there are more events happening than when you have two teams in a race. Every week, there are three teams who, quote unquote, can't afford to drop points, who might drop points, instead of two teams. That increases the amount of times you are going to see a team drop points. That is just sort of how it works. Similarly, when you are a team that is good enough to win any particular title that you happen to be playing for, and you are playing for four trophies a year, give or take, you have more trophies that you can quote unquote fail to win. Like, if it feels like you are always coming up short, it is mostly because you are always in the running. Like, that is what happens when teams get good. And I think about this particularly in relation to Arsenal right now. Mm-hmm. Who have gone from, hey, maybe we've got a shot at an FA Cup, to, hey, we could in theory win any of the domestic cups, Premier League, or Champions League in the space of about 18 months. You just have a lot more swings, and you're still going to miss a lot. It's just how it works at the upper end of, like, the pyramid here.
Yeah, and one thing that is nice looking back is the way that Liverpool under Jurgen Klopp are seen as a success. And, like, yes, they won many trophies, including the two biggest. And they also had many seasons where they fell just short. And the season where they got the Premier League title was really not, I don't think, the best season of that set. But, you know, you get a bunch of swings.
I think we both agree that the best Jurgen Klopp Liverpool team is the one that came up just short in the Premier League and lost in the Champions League finals and only walked away with an FA Cup when they really could have been a treble-winning team.
Yep.
Quadruple-winning team? Did they make the final of the League Cup?
I thought they won both the FA Cup and the League Cup that season. So they did, like, the worst part of the quadruple.
Yeah. They beat Chelsea in both of those finals, I believe, now that I think about it.
Nice pull. And then also City. Does anyone remember when City were the Champions League chokers because Pep Guardiola overthought it? Like, there was a long period of time when people would, like, not accept City's greatness because despite winning all of their Premier League titles, they couldn't do it in Europe. And this is just the way this sport works.
Right. No, 100% it is. And as you were saying, the more stuff you're involved in, the more room there is to craft these narratives. And sure, on a game-by-game basis, at a micro level, it is worth going into what went wrong here, what went right there, explaining and understanding all of this stuff. Because, you know, from the perspective of the people who are in it, the sort of macro, on average, reason things work out is because they are fighting tooth and nail for every single micro advantage. But at the end of the day, it is also worth understanding that all of that fighting for micro advantages evens out and cancels each other out. That, like, you win some and you lose some to your talent level at some level, right? And so, like, this weekend just feels to me like it kind of happens sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's a good point to make. That, like, obviously we spent a whole bunch of time breaking down those Champions League games. I think that the Champions League matches, there was more to say on the level of like something interesting is happening here in the actions and reactions. And maybe you can pull something out of that that is meaningful about these teams. And I felt way, way less that way about what's been going on in the title race. And I think it's important to sort of disaggregate those points. The other thing to say about Liverpool and now Arsenal is that Liverpool sort of are very instructive about how you can kind of expect this to work, which is that you need to be at this level for like 6-7 years to be confident that those really big trophies will come. And sometimes they just come on the first year. You know, sometimes you're just Leicester City, you know? Sometimes you're Chelsea in that Champions League run with Tuchel. Like, great. Way to be. You know, now everyone's happy. Although Chelsea fans aren't happy, so I guess there's a lesson there. And so Arsenal are now, like, their second year in to being this good, and they've actually taken a pretty big step forward from last season. And there is still every chance that Arsenal will do the historic double, and everyone's going to be happy, and it won't even matter that much if things fall apart. But the lesson of Liverpool is that keeping things together for 6 or 7 years at this level is the goal, and you're going to fail most years because football is horrible. And that is the thing that I think that, like, Arsenal should be aiming at as a club. Well, obviously, like, week to week, we can talk about the ways that Arteta tries to get the double right now.
Like, yeah, I think that that's all right. I mean, it is not easy to stay at this level for an extended period of time. And I think there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of reason to be quite optimistic that Arsenal can. Honestly, a lot more so than Liverpool at this point in their respective cycles. Which is not to say Liverpool can't, but they got a lot of work to do. Whereas Arsenal kind of need to, like, manage and trim and, like, poke and prod to keep them, their, like, the structure of this club pretty set. Liverpool are at the beginning of a, obviously, with Klopp leaving, but even just the talent, a pretty significant cycle, you know, of renewal. I don't know, like, I guess I think about it this way. 10 days ago, Arsenal fans would have ripped your arm off for a chance to be where they were this season at the beginning of the year, right? Like, they would have signed on the dotted line in a heartbeat. And you're going to tell me, like, that you should meaningfully feel different about that? A draw at home against Bayern and a loss against Aston Villa, who, by the way, are, like, maybe the fourth best team in the Premier League? Like, in 2 games? Like, I'm sorry. That maybe that will be the reason they don't end up winning the title. But you can't help it. Like, you're not the only team out there. There are other good teams.
Yeah, I agree. And exactly. I mean, I feel like we've sort of gone over that point a few times, and I'm, like, mildly annoyed with the world and the way that people are talking about the title race, so I had to do a podcast on it. And Mike felt similarly. I don't know how that happened.
Weird how that works out, huh? All right.
Cheers, y'all.
Cheers, y'all.